This is Relationship, a podcast presenting a gay look at traditional relationships and values.
With your hosts, the Cratellis. I'm Marco.
And I'm Tony.
I get it how I live it. I live it how I get it. Count the motherfucking digits. I pull up with a lemon. Not cause she ain't living. It's just your eyes get acidic and this ain't a scrimmage. Motherfucker, we ain't finished. I told you we won't stop. About a business. Like yours, but you're in it. Wave hello to the top. I know I messed up.
You were doing so well.
My tongue, I don't know why. It's as I've gotten older, for whatever reason, I cannot like speak as quickly as I used to. I remember Beyonce and Destiny's Child used to have quite a few speedy songs in their days. Think about Bugaboo, for example. And for whatever reason, I just cannot speak as quickly as I used to.
Pobrecito.
The lips, the teeth, the tip of the tongue. The lips, the teeth, the tip of the tongue.
You couldn't even say that.
No, it takes me a minute. How are you?
Not tongue-tied. How are you?
Very tongue-tied. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We're Hamptons bound. Hey.
We are. Yippee for us.
Hey.
We're terrible. We're the worst.
Why are we terrible?
Because we're going to the Hamptons.
Why is that terrible?
I don't know. We're just the worst. We're bougie.
Bitches better put some respect on our names.
Put some respect on my tick.
Hey. I'm here for it.
No, you're not. You're in the Hamptons.
Hello. Yeah, doing good.
Paying $50 for a salad.
Correct. What is it called? An aquois salad. An aquois. That's from White Chicks, which you know is one of my favorite movies.
It is indeed.
I love that movie so much. Such a good movie. How are you feeling? What's going on in your life?
I'm good. I'm much more rested than we were last week now that I've got roller coasters out of my system.
We slept all day the next day after that.
Half the day for sure. And I must tell you that the next time I drove the car, I definitely was like, why is this windshield in my way? I should be feeling the wind.
That sounds weird.
Yep. Yep, that I felt like I was on a roller coaster. I was like, let's do this.
Well, at least our car is comfortable enough to feel like a roller coaster. I don't know if that's an actual thing.
Not a thing.
Not a thing at all.
No, I'm good. I'm well rested. Work is going well. Life is good. We're beach bound. It's summer. It's lovely. All is well with the world. How are you?
Everything you just said. I'm good. I am tired still. I feel like these days you put my body at rest, then just call it a night. But I'm good. I'm good. I'm very excited. We are recording this days before we head to Les Hamptons. And I'm very excited about it. I'm very happy to be able to relax and have some beach and some sun and some pool and all the fun things. It's going to be such a good time, right?
All the funs. I cannot wait.
It's going to be so cool. So we're doing that and it's very exciting. And I can't wait. I'm trying to stop myself. I'm literally, this is going to be a group meeting right now because I'm trying to stop myself from buying stuff.
Oh, stop buying things.
I can't help it.
Yes, you can.
No, I can't. You know, when I go through a little, I'm not depressed, but I feel like when I go through like a little bit of like a womp womp time in my life that I'm like, oh, things will make me feel better if I buy things.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm going through that right now.
Oh, also known as depression.
I guess. I mean, I'm sure it's a form of depression for sure.
I don't know why you're so opposed to just saying that.
Well, no, because I mean, it's not that I'm so opposed. I would really love it if you were talking into the microphone and paying attention.
I am talking to the microphone.
It's not that I'm opposed to saying it. It's because I like get it. I understand what's happening, but I also know that I'm kind of like a, you know, like shake myself out of it kind of person. Like, okay, this is what I'm experiencing. Like, okay, all right, cool. I acknowledged it. On to the next, right? Like, it's all good. And so that's what I need to do. And I just haven't done that yet.
Yes. Yes, you do.
Yeah. So that's all I need to do. But I want to get the matching backpack to my fanny pack.
Oh, Lord. Okay. So about our QRG.
I really want it. It's cute. It's pretty. I want. And then I need a new suitcase. That's the other thing I got to buy. Because the friggin' company that I got my last carry-on suitcase with, they, like, the friggin' suitcase broke. Like, it's broken. Like, the wheel, like, just busted. And so now she needs crutches.
I don't know why you couldn't just replace the wheel.
Because why would I do that? Like, the amount of money that you're going to spend to replace the wheel, you may as well just get a new suitcase.
You don't math very well, do you?
You don't math at all. You don't know how much it costs to replace a wheel.
It can't be $90.
It's probably going to be about $90.
It's definitely not true.
You don't know that.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So anyways, so those are things that I just need, but I'm trying to like stop myself from buying things. But at the same time, I'm like, I want it. I want it right now.
Sounds like you.
It'll be fun though. We'll see. I will. I'm trying. I've been good. I've been preventing myself from doing it, but I think that that's just not going to last very long.
How is you resisting for 5 minutes doing good?
How do you figure it's 5 minutes? How do you know it hasn't been 5 days and I just haven't told you about it? I just had to get a microphone in front of me to be able to admit to it.
That's, you're such a freak.
No, that's how it helps, right? Again, this is a group meeting. Got to put myself in front of people that will not judge me, him, and then be able to make
none of those people are on this call right now.
I know. That's the sad part. If anybody wants to help me out, well, you know what? We have a code for BetterHelp. Maybe I just need to call them.
Therapy is also covered by our insurance.
Thank you, Mr. Technical.
You're welcome.
I'll just call BetterHelp, you know, so that we can get some of that money back.
Which will be helpful.
All right. Maybe we should hop into our hashtag QRGs for the week. What you say about
probably a good idea.
You think?
Yes.
Every week, Tony and I will pick a wonderful queer couple and highlight them as our hashtag queer relationship goal. See, tongue-tied yet again. Our hope is to bring these relationships to the forefront and give a sense of positivity and perspective to the queer relationship narrative. If you and your partner are interested in becoming our hashtag queer relationship goals, or if there is a queer relationship that you admire and would like to bring to our attention, please reach out to us. Tag us on your couple's photos on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Our handle is at Pod Relationship. Tony and I will take a look at these photos and posts and could potentially highlight you and your partner on an episode of the podcast. Sorry, the dog is having a nightmare. Got to give me 2 seconds. Tony, vamp, vamp, vamp.
Poor little puppy. So this week, we are highlighting a really cute couple out of Maine. They are Toby and Michael. That's at Toby and Michael. They are, like I said, they're from Maine. They are engaged. They are going to be PhDs. And I'm, until a recent picture, I was pretty sure they were homeless.
Homeless? I don't, okay, so.
I mean, their home was a camper.
Those opinions do not reflect both of us, just so you guys know.
No, they just were always camping and always in a camper. I was like, do y'all have a home? They were talking about buying a home. But then I saw a more recent picture. It's like, we're decluttering our existing rental. It's like, oh, okay, you do have a home. Okay. But that was like literally one picture of their home. And then everything else is on the lake, camping, people, in the woods.
You can't be calling people homeless, Tony. That's not nice.
It's not bad to be without a house.
You just can't be out here talking and saying, oh, they looked homeless. That's just, you know. Anyways, Toby and Michael, y'all are great, though. No, I do love them a lot. I think that they are adorable. Absolutely adorable. What's so interesting to me is, one, that this is week two in which we're highlighting a Toby. Like, not everyone's name is Toby. And for some strange reason, we managed to find two of them in a row, which is just hysterical. And then two, they are, so there's this amazing Instagram page where they show you couples and you have to guess whether they're siblings or whether they're a couple.
Oh. And
it is absolutely hysterical. And I feel like if you put Toby and Michael on that it would be really funny because they look very similar, like, to one another, but, like, definitely not, like, they don't look like they're brothers, but they look like they have they go to the same barber.
They favor each other.
You can tell they go to the same barber. They have, like, the exact same facial hair. They have both gorgeous smiles.
Beautiful smiles.
So happy. So it's like, it's just very fun to see this happiness in their pictures. They're just so cool. I feel like we call them homeless and we call them siblings. So this is not going on.
They're probably going to tell us, you can take this down.
This is not going very well. Michael, we love you. We love both of you. You guys are absolutely stunning, by the way. And they take really great pictures. I think that they should be teaching classes on how to take the perfect selfie, because
it's true.
Whatever they're doing, it's working.
They're doing it right.
Yeah, it's really good. I don't know how they managed to do this. And I got to be honest with you, like, they have way better bodies than we do. So, you know, they definitely are doing things right.
They absolutely are. It's all that hiking and camping.
Yeah, or so you
from say. Being homeless.
Oh my gosh, stop calling them homeless.
No, they have a camper, that's all.
Yeah, it's really cool. No, I like it. This is so, like I said, they're really cool. I like them, and we think that you're gonna like them too. So make sure you hop on Instagram and follow at Toby and Michael on Instagram. They are wonderful. That's Toby and Michael. On Instagram, they're at Toby and Michael. They're absolutely wonderful. We j'adore them, and we think you're going to j'adore them as well. So check them out. Double tap their images. Let them know that the Critelli sent you. And fall in love with them like we did.
They're fantastic. You're going to love them.
Absolutely. So Tony and I are going to take a short break, but when we come back, we are going to try to solve the world's problems Critelli style. As you all know, the Relationship Podcast found a new home at DNR Studios, and we couldn't be more excited.
Every week, we bring you the podcast days earlier than on your traditional podcast platform. For only $12.95 a month, you can sign up for a DNR Studios Plus subscription, where you can check out our podcast, as well as others like Derek and Romaine, If These Ovaries Could Talk, The Adam Sank Show, and more.
For only $6.95 a month, you can get the Relationship Podcast on Mondays and hear all about our shenanigans before the rest of the world.
We just launched a new segment exclusive to the DNR Studios platform. It's called The Shit Show. As you know, every week we talk about a topic related to relationships and personal growth.
Now, Tony and I will play a game related to the topic in an effort to lighten up the mood and create more laughter, but you can only listen to it on DNR Studios.
So, if you're able to, head to dnrstudios.com and sign up for a subscription. Get exclusive content from us and even more relationship fun for your week.
We appreciate your love and support.
Bye. Bye.
Sky Daddy, help us.
Please.
Today's topic, I'm going to try my hardest to not go off.
You might.
Oh, I know I'm going to. But I've had a couple of shots.
You did?
I'm on my second beer.
You are?
And we'll see what happens.
You quiet backroom alcoholic.
You lying asshole. You know that you poured all that shit for me.
So I didn't pour your second beer.
Oh, you managed to take that one thing. I had some after work cocktails.
You're teetering on the edge.
Yeah. Yep.
A bearable.
Today's topic is a very interesting one because we are talking about fetishization.
Racial fetishization.
Yeah, it's interesting because we'll see as the episode progresses how well I can say the word fetishization, because I've done it twice now and it's been fine.
But you fetishized twice?
I've said the word twice, but as time progresses, we know that it's only going to go downhill from here, folks. So
hit or miss.
Whoop, there it be. So tell me, okay, so you are a white man.
I am.
That is married to a black man.
I am?
Yep. Has the concept of fetishizing crossed your path within gay culture, within, I don't know, like real life within society or anything like that? Has it been brought to your attention during the course of our almost 12 years together? Has anyone addressed our, like, your potential fetishizing of me or what it's like to be with a black man or anything of that sort?
It's never been my experience, and it's never even come across my desk until the last time we were in Florida with Dwayne and his friend, who told us what a white man said when he was topping that white man. And then the conversation led to fetishizing black people. Hmm. And it had not occurred to me prior to that. Now, let's put things into perspective. I am a privileged white male who only recently got a whiff of what woke looks like.
I'm sorry, you said it wrong. It is a whiff.
A whiff. A whisper of wokeness. Wokeness, yeah. So that's definitely, like, we have to put things into perspective. Like, I'm a typical white male. And so, no, it never occurred to me. Like, I was thinking about it when we were preparing for this episode, when we were reading the content. Like, I've never done an inventory of the various races and ethnicities that I have dated, been attracted to, slept with, whatever. But when I actually think about it, I think I've only ever dated two black guys.
Mm.
And I don't know that that necessarily means that I can't or didn't fetishize them. Because again, just barely waking up, like scraping the sleep out of my eyes. But I hope that I don't do that with you. My interest in you is as a whole person, not as a person with a hole. And you're welcome. And
it's not a thank you.
So you're welcome. And so, I mean, I sincerely hope I haven't. I cannot say with any certainty that I didn't ever. It's certainly not my thing. It's not something I mean to do. I remember when so they weren't dating apps for me or for us, they were dating chats. But I remember you could search the chat rooms with filters. And I remember one of those filters being ethnicity, well, race. And I remember thinking, what a silly filter. Mm-hmm. Like I understood some things, parts of it, but like distance, I totally get distance. Like, I'm not going to travel 4 hours. Like, sorry, I'm just not. Like, if you're that interesting, we'll run into each other. Yeah. Or some great ass. Hello. You know, I don't care about your size. I don't care about your build. Like, none of that mattered to me. Like, that was never a thing. But what really always got me was the age and then the race. I was like, what is this for? Like, distance I get because I want to talk to you. I want to get to know you. I want to be around you. And that was, I think, the only filter I ever used. Maybe that one and the what you're looking for. Because I would always turn off the hookup one, because that was not to, you know. But if you're not at least looking for friendship or dating, then, like, you and I don't have anything, you know, to talk about tonight. You know, again, if we meet out in public, maybe, but.
Age was important to me just because, and don't get me wrong, like, my age parameters were a little more wide than other people's, right? I wasn't, like, searching in, like, a very short age pool. And I never put on the race parameters because that, like, just did not, I was like, this is absolutely stupid.
I just never understood the argument. If you filter by race, you're not racist. Like, that's,
hello?
That's the definition of racism. So, you're literally discounting my race.
Because you've asked me the question too, have I ever felt fetishized by you?
You're such an asshole.
You're an asshole. have I ever been fetishized by you? No, I don't know that I ever feel. One thing I will tell you is that I would just caution you against counting the number of Black people that you've been with. Just because like you shouldn't just necessarily count. Look, I know we live in this world where like all of your past experiences are on like full display. And so it's like necessary to try to like stand up for yourself, right? Or like try to prove in another way. It's you don't owe anybody any like numerical explanation as to you not being a racist or not being a fetishist. You don't owe anybody that explanation. So you can just say, I have definitely dated a multitude of different races in my previous experiences, and a few of them have been Black, and that's the beginning and end of it. You do not have to specifying a count is very slightly icky, to be completely honest with you. So, and I know you weren't trying to be icky behind it, like at all. Like we all know that you're being pure and lovely behind it. But I'm just
telling you, though.
Yeah, right. I'm just telling you for future reference, like you don't have to specify it. I do know that you as a white man have always been you have kind of dated in the same respect that I have, is that there are just people out there, and it just so happens that they're in different races and or ethnicities and things of that nature that offer
ages or body types
and things like that, that offer different perspective to life that we're very fascinated with, which is how I wound up married to a white man. I've just always really believed and Pollyanna'd this entire theory that you and I are going to teach each other different things about the world, right? That's just kind of always been my thing. And so I've been drawn to white people because of it, but it's not necessarily a specification. I will say that in my wokeness, and as I've kind of gotten more comfortable in my Blackness, I have definitely been very much more attracted to Black guys, very much like way more attracted to Black guys than I have in the past. Not because I wasn't attracted to Black guys in the past, but it was kind of like there wasn't a future with a Black guy. Not that there's a future with Black guys now, because I'm definitely married at this point, but I definitely have allowed myself to be a lot more open to the concept of being attracted to Black guys in my my newfound wokeness. That said, have I ever been fetishized? And it's funny because I didn't think about it until we started doing this episode. And I was thinking about, there was this time where my ex before you,
to be clear, you were fetishized, period, not fetishized by me.
No, not by you.
No, I'm just asking.
Oh, no.
Because I would want to know if I had done it.
No, I don't. I would really have to think about it, but I don't think that you've ever fetishized me.
I really think about it because I'd be interested.
Yeah, no, I've never felt that way. And I think that if I had, I would have shared it with you. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, it wouldn't have been like a, hey, we're doing this on the podcast today kind of thing for you. But that being said, I'm sorry.
Good to know.
Yeah, right. But that being said, no, I remember my ex before you. My mom was coming to visit. And my mom had come to visit. And I was I had visited with her. She was gone. And I like went to go see him. And he made a comment and asked me, he was like, oh, did you tell her that you had I'm trying to think of how he put it. But the gist of it was like, did you tell her that you had a white boy that was doing you good or something of that nature, like something to that effect? And I remember hearing that and being I was completely turned off to it. Like I was like, wait, what? I don't know. And I don't even remember. I remember reacting to it like in like a disgusted way. Like, what the fuck did you just say to me? But I don't remember what the result of it was. And but I do know that we stopped dating very soon after. And it wasn't because of that, because this was also the dick bag that decided to cheat on me during the entire, you know, during our relationship. But
that dick bag.
But
not to be confused with the bag of dicks, which is a great thing.
Yeah, right. But I remember him saying that, and I was completely like, what the fuck? Like, where am I and how do I get out of here? Kind of thing like that. Like, it was just not fun. And so I say that to say that, like, obviously I've been fetishized and I've dated, I won't say quite a few, but I've dated a few white guys in my dating history. And I don't, no one has ever made me feel as though that my being black was the reason why they dated me, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
No one's ever tried me in terms of that. It's never been like I'm pointing out my blackness during sexual intercourse or anything of that nature. I've just always, like, it just so happens that I've been black. But I, like, again, I will say that I don't have a vast dating history at all. Like, I didn't necessarily date like a lot of guys in general. And so, but I will say that I've had lots of racist experiences, and I guess I have had quite a few guys. I have had quite a few guys that have said stupid microaggression-y type stuff. That's been like, you're a much more attractive black guy than I expected, or you're the best looking black guy that's here. And which again is a fetish slash microaggression
slash gross
slash disgusting. And so I have had those experiences before. It's been very interesting. Say things.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's been like very interesting. And so as I have made it very clear these days, I love everyone. I love gay culture. I love, you know, people in general, but I'm finding that I'm having a very hard time existing in spaces where white gay males are the majority of the people that are there. It's been very challenging for me in general. I've made it very clear, especially on my Twitter. If you follow me, at m.cott on Twitter. But I have found that I am M-D-O-T-C-O-T, by the way. I've found...
Not the important part of this conversation. I've
found that what's very interesting to me is, like, gay Twitter, for example, is full of nothing but, like, muscled white gays that have hashtag BLM inside of their, you know, bios. And then you
scroll... The only thing that's black in the entire feed?
It's the only thing that's black in their entire feed. Mm-hmm. You scroll through their entire feed, and it's, like, them and their other muscled bros that are all white, that hang out in Fire Island and in PV and in Palm Springs and in Miami and things of that nature. And, you know, and so it's very interesting to me that they pull from black culture when they want to suck black dicks or have a black guy, you know, fuck them or anything of that nature. But then when it comes to, like, actually showing up for black guys, and, like, actually being there in a space that is not consistent with sex, that they are nowhere to be found. They're nowhere to be found. And it's obvious fetishization, right? Like, it's so blatant that, like, the writing's on the wall. Hashtag Destiny's Child. And so it's, like, very... It's, like, very weird to me that this is, like, so evident, but white gays are not understanding of it. And so when they get called out by, you know, the brown people, They have a hard time accepting it, right? Like, they don't want to listen to it. They think that we're being assholes. And that everything, why does everything have to be about race, right? Like, that is like the number one argument. And it's like, because, bitch, it's about race. Like, the entire thing is quite literally about race. So I don't understand why you don't understand this. Like, what are we fucking talking about, Brad? Like, what are we doing?
Come on, Karen.
Hello? And so it's just very fascinating to me. And I'm having a very hard time these days, because, again, like I said, is when we as brown people, I'm talking about, you know, Indian people and Native people and Black people and Latinx people and everything in between, right? Indigenous people, like when we are looking for white people to show up for us in very meaningful ways, Asian people, by the way, we cannot have, like, white people don't show up for us in meaningful ways. But when it comes time to look for that BBC on Grindr and her scruff and her chappy and all of the other dating apps that y'all are using, not even dating, hookup apps that y'all are using, y'all are only showing up because you want to get dicked down for a night, and that's the only thing that's important for you in that moment. And that's weird, right?
It's very strange. I don't get objectification. I get objectification. Conceptually, I get objectification. I can't subscribe to objectification. And so to then fetishize, which to me is like the Diet Coke of objectification, like it does not compute. It just does not compute for me.
Yeah.
And I cannot imagine what it must be like to be marginalized and then objectified based on your marginalization.
Yeah, like I said, I don't have a shit ton of experience, so I'm actually coming at this from a very non-experiential place, right? Like, I can't, like, really speak to my super specific scenarios in which I've experienced any of these things, but I will tell you that being a minority in America, in this world, realistically, but definitely in this fucking country, has, like, really consists of different ways that people view you. And it's not because of your brains and or your beauty. It's usually because of stereotypes that you really want to play. Like, I'm sorry, like, I'm gonna call this out, but like, I, like, these white guys, especially military white guys, that come back and like marry or like wife up these Asian women, right? Because there's this I was stationed in Korea story, or I got to experience all these Korean and or Asian subservient women, and, you know, and did all, there's this like whole generation of our like grandfathers, right? Grandfathers and some of our fathers that like were in the military that like went to other countries, you know, fought in wars and things of that nature, and came back and married Asian women, not because they found these women just to be like beautiful by nature, but because their fetishes, their experiences in other countries led them to think that when they came back to this world, that's who they had to find. There, I said it.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. You know, and I look, and I'm not going to ignore the fact that like Black women fetishize white men sometimes, right? Black people fetishize white men and things of that nature sometimes, right? There's the whole good credit situation, which is a fetish. Like, let's be honest, right? They're supposed to like upgrade your life and do better for you. Sometimes white women fetishize Black women fetishize white men because they think that they need to have a child with them so that they can have a kid with good hair, right? Like that is like a whole thing. So those things exist. And so I'm not going to act like it doesn't exist in this world, but also at the same time, like it leans a lot more to the, you know, to the, especially, you know, the white gays wanting again, the BBC, you know, the white women knowing that once you go black, you know, dot, dot, dot kind of situation like is going to exist for them. And then, and it's like, it's just very bizarre. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I just, again, I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get that way of thinking at all. It's so foreign to me and it's so strange and it's so like, I don't know, outdated.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say ignorant because that's not fair, but naive,
ridiculous. It's just, it's not normal. Anyway, it's getting really heavy right now. So we read an
article. Did we read some articles?
We read an article.
We read two.
We read an article. The first one that I read that I actually fucking loved.
Yeah, it was good.
Was from the gaytimes.co.uk. So it's the UK version of Gay Times, which was amazing. And it's an article written by Laron Clark Oliver. And he says, I spoke with, spoke to 25 men about race-based sexual preference. Here's what happened. And this article was written in September of 2020, which I
really timely.
Yes, super timely. But what I love is he starts the article by saying, like, during the summer, we all saw the same thing I said. We all saw the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement, but how many of us truly engaged, learned, grew, and questioned our behavior and choices? Behavior with a U, by the way.
Because it's .uk.
Hello. The LGBTQ plus community was reminded that the freedoms many of us enjoy today are the direct results of queer Black people. As we approach the end of 2020, I spoke with 25 men about their race-based sexual preference, how the events of the summer have or haven't shifted their position, and if racism in the LGBTQ plus community can be tackled. So essentially, he goes through this article to talk about, like, how, quote unquote, it's just my preference is gross and how it's like really disgusting and not normal to like say that like I like you have a racial preference is not racist. It's racist. Like, let's just call the spade a spade, right?
Well, and they go into some really great case studies. There's one where it's like these married white men say that the less attractive Black man is still more handsome and sexy than a good looking white man.
Like, that's fucking racist. And
that
also
is so,
like,
racist.
Fetishized me. Like, yeah, like, what? Like, and y'all white people be wild. Like, y'all say stuff like that and then think that it's like, oh, I just gave you a compliment. And it's like, wait, what? That wasn't a compliment.
And then there's another interview with a guy. They're all fake names, but the guy's name is Ivan. And it's like he was like going on and on about like how it's not racism, it's not fetishizing, and just and all this stuff. And he was like, yeah, I think we can just end this conversation because it's not really going anywhere. And then they ran into each other later. And he says, you know, I understand that grouping together and discounting an entire race of people is racism. And I realize I have some work to do. Like, good for you for getting there, but damn, the bar's real low. If it took you, if that was an epiphany, like if that was an epiphany, the bar is too low.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, and don't get me wrong, like they ask like a lot of really great questions because the, you know, they ask a lot of really great questions. Like, do we need to desire someone to treat them with respect? And then there was like another great question that was posed about like, do we there? I'm trying to remember. There was one section where a guy I think it's Matt, not his real name, Matt, a white man from East London who believes preference and racism are different. How I treat people in life and who I like to have sex with are very different. Matt explained his love for different genres of music, his diverse friendship group and colleagues, yet asked, what am I supposed to do? Go out and sleep with Black people just to prove I'm not racist? I politely asked him to not do that. I asked Matt why he was so angry. I'm fed up of being told that because I don't fancy Black or Asian people, I'm racist. I asked Matt if he felt it was racist to not give someone a job opportunity due to their race. And he said, yes, absolutely. I then asked why a potentially rewarding relationship or sexual encounter was any different. I never got the answer to that question, as Matt felt it was best to end the conversation there. And I fucking loved that.
Yeah.
But that is like the whole thing. Like, I don't understand, like, how, like, and don't get me wrong, like, I look, if you grow up around what you've always known, you will always want what you've always seen, right? And so you can say that, like, I just haven't been exposed to the different spaces, pun intended, of life, right? And so, and I can understand that, right? I was raised around quite a few white people. Like, I went to school with a lot of white people. So it's not abnormal that, like, my attractions would lie within white people. I was hanging out with white girls that liked other white boys. And so, like, I would automatically try to see the attractiveness in white boys because that's what I knew. But, like, but say that, right? Don't try to argue against things. Like, that's why I always say, like, I don't understand why people get so mad about being called racist, as if it's not expected. Like, not like, and don't get me wrong, like, I'm not trying to say, like, take away the negative connotation regarding, you know, surrounding racism, but like you're racist. Like, you were born in the South, you were raised in an all-white family, you haven't had any experiences outside of your race, yet you think that Black people are weird or you know, and all these other things, and you don't think that it's like racist, or you weren't born into racism? Really?
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's so interesting how much we don't want to call things what they actually are.
Like, let's just own it. I remember just the other day you were talking about manipulation, and you were like, manipulation has a negative connotation to it. And I was like, you're damn right. It does.
Right? It does. It absolutely does. Racism? But you're constantly manipulating everything. You're manipulating your feet in your shoes to walk on the ground without getting your feet hurt. You're manipulating a pencil to write things. Like, manipulation gets a bad rap.
It does. Well, and the same thing again with ignorance, right? So you can call somebody ignorant and they, like, literally think that you called their child ugly. And it's like, no. I'm just saying you're ignorant. You don't have the information on the topic, which is by its definition ignorance. Like, that is ignorance. You don't know the
literally the definition of ignorance. Yeah.
And so I don't understand why you're getting so angry with me about it. Like, chill the F out. Like, it's fine.
It's crazy. The other article that we read is from level.medium.com. Mm-hmm. It's called The Fear of a Black Fetish. Mm. And I really enjoyed the other article. I found this one to be very engaging and relatable. Like, it's told from the perspective of a Black gay man and in that voice. And all about, like, the questions and the doubts and the self-doubt and the depression and the, you know, the schema that can occur in our head just from being, you know, fetishized. And I found it so interesting, especially coming back again and again and again to that question. Does he just like me because I'm Black? It's so fascinating. So, again, not something I can ever even begin to understand.
Yeah. So Jaden recounts, who is the author of this particular article. He recounts a date that he had gone out with a white guy. And I guess, like, during the date, the guy says, he says something. He said something that led Jaden to ask the guy, like, was your last boyfriend Black? And then the white guy pauses and says, oh, yeah, he is. He said, and then he proceeds to say, white guys to the back of the line, please. And then Jaden says he chuckled along with him. He had one of those infectious laughs that make you reflexively join in. But internally, my heart was in free fall. Fuck, I thought, was this guy who thus far had seemed mesmerized only into me because I'm Black? Is that a thing? And so he kind of, you know, chronicles, like, the entire, like, journey that he took
in his head to
like, try to, like, understand whether or not this was a thing, like, whether or not white guys actually do it. And what I really loved is that there was this it was taken from Quora.com, and it was a screenshot, and this white woman like literally talks about how like she doesn't understand like all the conversations surrounding race and blah blah blah, and you know, no, I'm not dating him because of the sex thing and blah 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 and all this other stuff. And then she finishes it by saying, however, what I appreciate so much in black guys and find unfortunately lacking in some white guys is sort of animal masculinity. Mm-hmm. He is like Tarzan in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought okay, that was
Karen.
Okay.
Okay, Karen.
And she thought that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fucking ridiculous. Like, how annoying. And again, y'all white people, y'all be wildin'. Say things like this and then think that it's like completely okay. So it's, you know, we as, you know, people of color, quite literally just exist in a space in which, you know, there are I want to say landmines, but I feel like that has a negative connotation. But like, you as white people could feel like there are landmines around conversations and are existing in a world with people of color because, you know, you could say something here and that blows up in your face, blah, 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 blah. And wah, we feel so sorry for you. But that being said, like, I feel like for us as black people it's like everything is like cringy for us, right? Things get said so frequently around us and we spend so much time like cringing and what's sad is that for a really long time we've just cringed and took it, right?
Cringed and bared it.
Yeah, we just dealt with it. Like, we cringed and we knew it wasn't right, but it was like whatever. And I think now we're finally at a place where we're like, you know what? No, bitch. No, you're not just going to come out the side of your neck with all this bullshit and think that we're just going to be okay with it. It's not okay. So no, at the end of the day, have I been fetishized? Yes. Will I allow for it to happen ever again? Absolutely not. And for those,
well, luckily you don't have to worry about that.
Correct.
At least not with me.
Correct. And for those of you out there that have experienced it, we are so sorry. And you know, we want better for you and hopefully you want better for yourself. We haven't even gotten into the details. You're going to have to tune into our Patreon segment where Tony and I talk with the aunties from the Minority Report. And we talk about their views on
this topic,
this exact topic, and what it means and how we perceive it and what's going on. We even talk about things like race play and what that all looks like and things like that. So again, if you're not a Patreon member, now's the time to join because we talk about some great shit on that segment that is like so much fun. So join us in on that so that you can hear a little bit more about that as well. But I think we solved this world's problems today. Yeah, a little bit.
We barely scratched the surface, kind of. But it is what it is.
Fair. Awesome. Well, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, Tony and I actually are joined by the co-hosts of the Minority Report, and y'all bitches is going to love this. Hey, y'all. We just wanted to take a quick second to talk about our favorite grooming brand and the number one shave brand in Italy, Perasso.
Whether you want a smooth, barber-quality shave or you need to give your beard the proper TLC, Perasso has you covered.
Their range of shave formulas address your specific beard and skin type, giving you a comfortable, consistent shave every single time.
Or for any stage of beard growth, Perasso has the perfect items for you. With four different scents to choose from, the beard care products leave your facial hair looking, feeling, and smelling great.
It's so true. I'm actually very prone to ingrown hairs and razor bumps. And so I've been actually using the Perasso Red line, which is the coarse beard and nourishing line. I love it so much because it's infused with sandalwood and shea butter. And so that not only like softens my hair, but it helps prevent ingrown hairs and things of that nature. So my skin is left feeling and like looking absolutely smooth. It gives me a super close shave and I love the smell of sandalwood and it leaves me smelling really, really nice.
It's great. I keep either a low to medium sized beard. And so I love, and you'll have heard me say this before, the Wood & Spice products. I'm always more of the woody and spicy person as opposed to the citrusy. And I really like, it's just this robust scent that is always like, it's clean, but it's like very manly. And I just love it. I wear it every single day. And sometimes I use both the balm and the oil.
Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you want to experience an Italian shave right from your own bathroom, or your beard needs some extra attention, head to Parasso-USA.com right now and snag some Parasso shave or beard items made for your particular skin or beard needs.
That's Parasso-USA.com. And at checkout, use code RELATIONSHIT15 for all your purchases today.
Get 15% off your purchase today at Parasso-USA.com when you use code RELATIONSHIT15 at checkout.
Up your shave or beard game with Parasso today, and don't forget to tell them the Critelli sent you. Bye!
All right, so I am thrilled with today's guests because I have considered myself a distant auntie for a very long time. I've been listening to their podcast for a while. But now we have the pleasure of having all three of them here today. And we are talking to the co-hosts of the Minority Report, Karel, Dewan, and Jarrell. Thank y'all so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for having us.
I'm obsessed with all three of you. Y'all make me laugh
every lot.
It's yes. Just, y'all are great, and it's just so fun to hear other like Black queer content out there, because I feel like there is such a lack of it in media at this point. So when I find stuff that makes me like really dig into like who I am as a person, I just tend to cling on to it. And so I'm very, very excited to be able to talk to all three of y'all today. It's so exciting.
Thank you. That's very sweet.
Yeah, we are so excited to be here.
Y'all are great. So in true relationship fashion, what we are going to do is we're actually going to have y'all introduce each other to our listeners. Okay. So I'm looking at my screen right now. See, and I didn't tell you guys that we were going to do this because I wanted the element of surprise. So as I'm looking at my screen right now, I'm going to start with Dewan. Dewan, you are going to introduce... You're going to introduce Jarrell to us. introduce Jarrell to our...
Okay. Look, so don't try to end our podcast. Good.
Right.
starting shit.
Like, you tried it.
Right.
Auntie Jarrell. One less queer podcast out there for us to compete with. Right.
So this is Auntie Jarrell. She is a Capricorn. She is also known by Auntie Hennessy, because if you can imagine what that life is like when you have a couple of shots or a couple of hits of that Hennessy, hey. That's exactly what you get. She's always ready to fight. She's feisty. She's fiery. She is poignant. She's intelligent. She's smart. She's beautiful. She's coupled. She's in Seattle. She is the moment.
She is
the moment.
Yeah. Okay.
As soon as you said,
that's a hell of an intro.
Got the shots of Hennessy. I just thought about that little church lady that be having like the little nips of like Hennessy or cognac in her bra. Just be like taking them all the time. I love that for you.
That would be
hard. I love that. That is a really good intro. Jarrell, why don't you introduce Karel to us?
Oh Lord.
Yes. All right. So, Auntie Karel, one of my good Judies, aka Auntie Vodka, she is like, she's the woman behind the green curtain, okay? She's the one that's doing everything. She puts all the episodes together. She's the reason why I'm even on the podcast. And her and I go back to like a group that we're in together. But she's the one that will make sure that everyone is taken care of. She's the one that makes sure everything's good. It's like a chameleon. She adapts to her situations and, like Vodka, goes with everything and anything. And she also is in the ATL, and she's a good old Michigan girl, too. and our PK of the podcast.
That's true. Yes.
Love it. True. Love it. Y'all need to pay for introductions moving forward. Like, you need to have people, y'all need to start that little service as part of it. Yeah. we'll do your intros for whatever you need. That's cute. I love it. Awesome. And then finally, Karell, why don't you introduce Dewan to everyone?
Coming to the stage is the one and only Miss Chardonnay. She's the one that's a little bougie, a little classy, a little ratchet. She will get you all the way together, but she'll be the most loyal human being on planet Earth. She's the one that I always go to for these long philosophical conversations. She's the one that I went to initially to start the podcast. We go back to the Chicago days playing volleyball. Aw, she's my boo. Like, she's adorable. She'd be rocking the little scruff. I'd be like, go ahead, Miss Scruff. I'm here for it. We love her in a good bob. Come on, Miss Chardonnay, Miss Dewan.
I love it. I love this. This is so cute. Y'all are so sweet. I love friendships all like are from long times ago. Like, y'all have been friends for a very long time, and I love seeing that.
Yeah. Yeah, decent amount of time. Like, because Dewan and I met literally playing volleyball league. Like, the bar that sponsored our volleyball team sponsored his volleyball team. So, like, every Sunday after the league was done, we'd all go to Burke's Bar in Chicago. And, like, the first couple weeks, like, we were, like, at different tables or whatever. But after a while, we're like, okay, we see you every Sunday. You see us every Sunday. Let's just, like, combine powers and kiki it up on a Sunday fun day. And that's how we started our friendship. And it was literally maybe 6 months before I left Chicago. And we just hit it off from the get-go. I loved his energy. I just loved him. There was just something, especially like as you get older, you run out of time to be investing time in a lot of friendships and shit like that. So like you get a little more particular about who you're spending your time with. And from day one, I was like, okay, I know even after I leave Chicago, I'm going to be in contact with this human being. So that's how
we You know what's it. Wild? We did so many fireball shots that Sunday. But I remember meeting Karell because I literally that year I said to myself, I need more black people in my in my life. Like I just need more black queer men in my life. And so when we met, we sat right next to each other at the back of Burke's Bar. Yep. And I can't quite remember, but we got into a whole philosophical conversation that night, that day.
Absolutely.
It was like, it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon while we're like pounding back, like, I don't know, like 18 shots or whatever. And then he told me he was moving and I legit was like so sad. I'm like, wait, you moving in 6 months?
Yeah.
I just met you.
I know, doesn't that? It sucks. I feel the same. So my best friend lives in Florida. Another queer black person. And I remember when I told him that I was moving, he quite literally, like, he went into a full depression for a very long time. So I understand, like, when you make that, like, especially as queer black people, like, again, we're like few and far between. And so when you
depends on what circles you travel in.
It's true. It's very true. It's very true. And so when you meet one another, you do tend to like cling, right? Like you tend to like want to like keep that for as long as you possibly can. So
and that's how it was with Jarrell too. Like Jarrell, like so like another thing is like right when I was about to leave Chicago, I like became friends with another group, which is like my like core group to this day. And Jarrell was already friends with that group. And even though he didn't live in Chicago, he was always like constantly in and out of Chicago. And I forget, like, was it Market Day? I forget what event it was that was going on when I first met him. And actually, I have the picture still back here. Like one of the first times I met Jarrell. And he was just another one. Like from day one, like what you see of Jarrell is what you get of Jarrell. Like 1000%. Like you won't have to question one way or the other how Jarrell is feeling about you in that moment. And I adore that about him because I'm not like that. I'm out of the three, probably the more gray that try to stay as neutral as I can, figure it out, let's keep it moving kind of thing. And he's the one that's like, nope, this is what it is. Right, wrong, or indifferent. But I adore that about him because it's like, I need that in my life. And he's another one where I'm like, I need to keep this friendship going no matter what. Even podcasts or not, these are two people that I'm going to still continue to have a relationship with because I just genuinely like them.
That's great. That's wonderful.
I love that. That is so cool. So, I mean, so let's get into the grits of the story. I want to hear a little bit.
No sugar. This time. With no sugar. No, no sugar. No, that part.
But you can add some shrimp.
You can add some shrimp, though. You're right. I don't know. If my family is listening to this, especially my brother, he's going to argue that because we were
your sister.
A sugar grits family.
Your sister has sugar with a side of grits.
And that's a dessert. That's oatmeal.
As I've gotten older,
that's ice cream.
Malt meal.
I definitely like a little bit of sugar in it, like a very little bit. Like I don't mind it, but like I like grits for dinner, and like that has zero sugar in it. But my family still like loads up on sugar in their grits, which is just the craziest thing in the world. That's a black faction divide.
That's like literally the black faction divide. Like you can have all kinds of like traditions that are like all synced up amongst a lot of families. But like when it comes down to certain foods and whether or not you put sugar in it.
Like, for example, do y'all put sugar in your rice?
No. I have. Actually, I have. Growing up, they try.
My family. So again, I grew up in a family with sugar rice as well, too. And as I've gotten older, like I don't do it anymore, but
you miss it.
Like we do that. And it was funny because like my mom's side of the family used to always like turn their noses up at us, thought that we were absolutely the craziest people in the world. But my dad's side of the family, like that's where they got it from.
It's like, where the sugar at? Where the sugar
Look, I know if we needed sugar, I was coming to your house to ask for a cup of sugar. Y'all got a cup of sugar?
Plenty. Our whole rice would be yellow because it would be butter and sugar inside of it. Like, which is
butter,
like,
sugar, rice.
Just waiting for a heart attack.
Sounds about black, though. Sounds about black.
So tell us about your beginnings. Where are you from? When did you come to your queer identity? What was that like for you? Give us like the Cliff Notes version of that. Let's start with Jarrell, because I feel like you got a good
I knew it. A little bit about me. So I'm originally from Gary, Indiana. So, you know, I'm...
Stop it. That's where my dad's from.
Really?
Yeah, my dad grew up in Gary.
Yeah, I'm from Gary. Yeah.
That's hysterical. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
He grew up in the Dory Miller Projects.
Oh.
Yeah.
I know exactly what it is, because that's right next to East Chicago. My family, I got other family over there too, about projects. Yeah. But no, let's see. Grew up in Gary. Then I moved to later years of my childhood to Minneapolis. So I grew up on the north side of Minneapolis, which is the black folks area of Minneapolis.
Minneapolis. I was just gonna say it.
I was gonna do this.
Come on, escapade. You gotta say it.
Yeah, I was gonna do it.
But literally I spent all of the rest of my adolescence and all of my 20s in Minneapolis. That's where I came out. Not a whole bunch. I love sports. I love meeting people. I love the travel. But it wasn't until like moving to Seattle about 4 years ago now is when I came into my queer blackness, though. So it's almost like I came out twice. Minneapolis is a very, you know, it's a snow bunny state. So there's a lot of white people, a lot of people that don't look like you. So when you come out, most of what you see is of queer white men. So, you know, I drank the Kool-Aid and tried to follow along and became... turned off completely by it because it was just, I never felt like I fit in. And so meeting like Carell in that group that year that I met Carell, I just got out of a bad breakup. So she was on her whole trip around the sun. And that's why she was, she had frequent flyer miles to Chicago, direct, nonstop. Let me tell you. I literally have everyone thinking I lived in Chicago once upon a time. You can't tell certain people I didn't live in Chicago from 2015-2016. But no, I'm the laid back but outgoing person who just loves to travel and meet people. And like Carell said, I'm the one to let you know real quick where I stand, where that line is, and don't cross it. Because I fight.
Especially if you add Hennessy.
What does it say? You could try Jesus, but don't try me because I fight.
Come on, Toby. Absolutely. Look, the hands that keep on giving.
Hello.
Come to Allstate.
Exactly. And you are, and so coming out to your family was fine. It was easy. It was
honestly, it was pretty. I'm the oldest of nine. I'm the oldest of my cousins in my whole generation as well, too. So like growing up, I got to meet my great grandma. I grew up with my great grandmother. And so knowing that I was the oldest was something that was instilled in me at a very young age. So I have a certain kind of like sacred spot in my family that, you know, just because I'm the oldest, like I'm like the untouchable, like if that makes sense. So being the oldest, just everyone just kind of already like loved me. I was like, I don't care. I don't care. It's great. It's great. My mom was the only one who was like, I'm going to need you to see the pastor. I'm going to need you to talk to your grandma. And then as soon as they shut it down and she was like, okay, all right, we're good. You know, but as coming out though, I had to kind of deal with some of the trauma of like, you know, being a young gay kid, you know, I'm like, oh, don't do that because that's what sissies do. And, you know, girls are supposed to be down. Don't do that because that's not what boys are supposed to do. So I was also kind of growing up, though, however, like kind of slapped on the wrist for certain things. Like, don't you smack your tongue at me. You know, don't roll your neck, you know, because I used to do all that stuff.
Your hips.
Right. Absolutely. So yeah. I always used to get clocked and get in trouble for that. So when I started to come out, I also realized that there was trauma behind some of that things. So I had to deal with that with my family. But you know, it's all good. Like everyone in my life can get the smoke except for grandma. So everyone knows that. Like everyone knows the only person on this planet that can't get the smoke is grandma. So everyone's free game and they know that too.
Try me. I love it. It's funny. I actually, a lot of what you were saying is a lot of, things that I too have experienced. I grew up in Las Vegas and then went to college in Reno, which is like 98% white, which was, you know, which was just crazy. So you end up finding yourself just trying to get by, right? And so, and with trying to get by, you just find yourself in situations that I don't regret, but at the same time, you know, like there wasn't other black people to date, that like there just wasn't. So I found myself like into white guys, which I have, again, no regrets. I'm completely happy. I love my husband. We've been together for 12 years. But like at the same time, like, you know, I got into to a point in my relationship where I was like, I don't know that I got to actually sample the buffet as much as I could. You know, because I like was very much so like thrown into a situation. But again, no regrets. But it, as black people, those are things that we just end up going through. White people never have to experience that, right?
They
never do. But we as black people, we just like those are just our experiences. We'll get into that a little bit. Dewan, tell us what it was like being little Dewan. Where'd you come from?
I grew up in Ohio, born in Cleveland. Lived in Maple Heights for the majority of my coming of age years. It's like a small suburb, like southeast of Cleveland. I'm a middle child. I'm also a Leo, so there are certain things that are really important to me, like loyalty. You know, like being there for your friends, and you know, and just overall trust. You know, but growing up black and gay, it was conflicting. It was tough. Because like Jarrell said, you know, there was a lot of moments where, I felt socially outside of like my own family where there wasn't a place for me. I was artistic. I loved to draw. I loved things that were, you know, like I loved doing things by myself. You know, I played tennis. I was in art classes all the time. You know, I played the piano, you know, and things that were like group sports and things like that. I didn't really get much into them. I'm also not really coordinated. So I'm also known as the Michelle of our trio here. So,
Miss make me say,
I'm dead. A little dip.
We're all of the darkness.
Yes, clearly.
So like, you know, as like a, you know, a young, you know, like black, closeted queer kid who was more drawn to like art and fashion and music, and not just popular music, but like, you know, like theater, you know, and, and that kind of thing. It was interesting because all of my contemporaries were, you know, I grew up in, you know, the late 80s and early 90s. So, you know, like that was hip hop culture at its like peak, you know? And so, that was just really interesting. Fast forward to me graduating, I went to Kent State, as a fashion design major, and a queer undercover, because I still had my girlfriend from high school that we never had sex with.
Didn't we all?
I was just going to ask you, did you ever actually have sex with her?
I was so afraid of having sex because my thought was, if I have the first time I have sex with a girl, I'm going to get her pregnant. My shit is so strong. I am not going to risk it. Like, for some reason, I thought in my head, nope. And not these jeans. I'm not getting tried. I can't wait to get away so I can like live my life free and all that kind of shit. So yeah. You know, I cowered under Christianity. I'm a good Christian boy, and you know, yeah, we will go on dates, and I'll tell you I love you, and I'll do all the, you know, all the romantic things. But when it comes to like, not getting
no
soiled. No, man.
Go trap me.
No, not at all. Not at all. So, yeah. So, I went to college. And then, yeah, my coming out was interesting because it was a very long process. I came out to myself my senior year in high school when I stood in front of my my dresser mirror and said the words, "I'm gay," out loud. And wow. That was so powerful and so cathartic because in my head, I knew it all along. I knew since I was like five, I knew that I was gay and I knew it was different. But saying the words was powerful. It wasn't until my junior year in college that my girlfriend and I had broken up that summer. So I was getting ready to have a whole summer too, but I was having a whole summer with the Backstreet Boys. And, that was an interesting year. And then I didn't come out to my parents until I was living in Columbus and I was living with my boyfriend. And then my mom wanted to come down for a weekend visit. And I had to tell her before she came down that we only have a one bedroom apartment.
I don't live alone, and there's one bedroom.
She knew I had a roommate. She had a roommate, but not that we were sleeping in the same bed. So yeah, I had to tell her. And I think that the thing that was interesting about all of that, and then I'll shut up because this is getting long winded. I think the thing that was interesting about that is, for me, coming out was a form of, I need to make sure that I was completely self-sufficient before I could come out. Because back then, you know, when you're talking about 1994, 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, you're on the tail end of the AIDS epidemic. You're on the tail end of that. You know, there's not a lot. You don't have, you know, the public displays of like homosexuality and like freeness with that. You didn't see gay images on TV like we do today. Like it was a completely different kind of world. So, you know, there are people much more so than today who are getting kicked out of their house, kicked out of their family, completely disowned, like, you know, like literally turning to the streets to like survive. And I said, okay, well, if I'm going to step out on my own, I need to make sure that I got my own job. I got my own place. I got my own thing so that if that shit happens, she good. Right. And, you know, fortunately enough, you know, my parents were, you know, both my mom and my dad, especially my dad. My dad is like the man's man, like just he's like the man. Like I love my dad so much. But my parents had different kinds of roles. So my dad was, even though he was big and macho and all that kind of stuff, he was very much in tune with his emotions. And he told me all the time that he loved me and, you know, gave me hugs and all that stuff. And my mom was much more of like the disciplinarian and like the, you know, the person that's like, you know, pushing us to be better and all of that. So, you know, I was really afraid of what my dad was going to say. But my dad, you know, said, listen, you know, absolutely love you. And, you know, as long as you're not doing anything that's not hurting yourself or anybody else, I don't give a damn what you do. So, you know, my dad's amazing. My dad's amazing. Mm-hmm. My mom took a little bit of time to come around, but she's a Gemini. So, you know, you never know which personality you have to play towards with that.
Please feel free to say all the things about the Geminis. Go ahead. More, go ahead. Go ahead.
Who's the Gemini?
It's not like Marco.
Oh, okay.
But I'm a May Gemini, which I think is a very distinct. It's a distinction.
That's a very Gemini thing to say.
Let me deflect. Let me deflect.
June Geminis are because I lean more towards Taurus, which I completely see, like, because I'm on the 29th. So definitely lean more towards, but I'm definitely a Gemini. Like, I can completely
Geminis are two different people.
Yeah.
Period. Yeah. And you never know which one you're going to get. And as long as you know that, like, honestly, some of my best friends are Leo and some of them are Gemini. I get along with Geminis because I know what I'm getting. Mm-hmm. I know what I'm getting into.
Really?
Yeah.
I never know what I'm getting into.
Now, it's a difference. Now, I said friends. I didn't say, like, hooking up. Partners, that's a totally different thing.
I won't date a Gemini. Thing. Maybe just because I got two sisters and two brothers and a father that's a Gemini.
My whole family. So my entire family and my husband are Pisces, and if I could do it all over again, I would never date another Pisces ever again, ever again.
Ruin that.
Ruin.
That's fucking emotional. Like I am a person that, like, and even in my family, like, we just say what needs to be said, right? We just say it, and like, it's done, and it's out, and it's over with. With Tony, I have to, like, worry about how I'm saying
it. You better say that shit correct.
Correct. And, and
you poor thing having to consider someone else's feelings.
That's a very Gemini. Literally. Remember how I was explaining how my dad and my mom are, like, completely different? My mom's, like, not the emotional, like...
And I feel like that's such a Pisces thing to say, oh, you poor thing, you have to consider someone else's feelings.
That's what it is.
All we have is feelings, and you need to consider them all the time.
But just think,
and
if I'm, you, like, actually, oh, considered it, how much life would be better for you, boo. Because literally, right, low-key, me and my husband right now in a little spat because he was on some bullshit about how he say some shit. So I was like, don't talk to me that way. That hurts my feelings. And since you're not considering my feelings... You better find some time today to consider my damn
so
feelings.
Exhausting.
It is, but
I mean, I agree with you,
for
though.
As long as it takes.
I agree with you. It's hard, like, you know, dating someone who's an emotional person. Like, because I'm dating a Virgo, and they're, like, secretly emotional.
Correct.
You know, like, they just keep it all in, and they just, like, implode from the inside. And I'd be like, give me something. Because as a Capricorn, I'm, like, black or white. If you're going to go off emotionals, then at least I know how to talk to you. Logical, I know how to work with you. But if you don't say nothing, don't do nothing, I'll be sitting like, bitch, where are we going?
Well, and that's my thing. I end up having to tell Tony all the time. I'm like, see, I feel like you don't know me, or like you don't give me any benefit of the doubt. Because like when I say the things that I say, it's not to hurt your feelings. And you know I'm not. My goal is not to hurt your feelings.
What's your goal?
My goal is to, like, say what I need
you
to
can,
say.
You can stay.
Because
you can stay.
What my issue is, if I don't say what I need to say, then it eats me up inside. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's, like, not very good. So I just need to say it, not for anything other than just getting it out of my body.
And, like, say it to the mirror and then write down some true feeling shit.
And then burn it.
Meanwhile, with Tony, I need to, like, light a candle. I need to put on some Sade in the background. And then, like, come to him in, like, some, like,
sweetest taboo. Come on now.
Exactly. I need to, like, come to him in some, like an iambic pentameter type, like, this is how I feel it type shit. And I'm like, oh, can you just, like, can I just say what I need to say? Because as soon as I say it, I'll be like, all right, I'm good. What's for dinner? Like,
well, I'm glad your needs were met.
Thank you.
That part.
Tony's over there, like, contemplating the meaning of life after what I say. And I'm like, my God. That's crazy. But no, I get that. But so you grew up around Geminis. So that's funny.
All that to say.
How did we get here?
Bringing it all the way back. Well, because he was over here talking shit about Geminis. And I had to
say, you had to, like, stand there, I had to represent.
He wasn't talking shit. Geminis, he was telling the truth.
Geminis will get defensive real quick. Like, their emotions is defense and attack. Those are the emotions. Yeah. Meanwhile, when they sit there and say, oh, I don't really, they have all these feelings.
Right.
It's because their mode of operation, how does I as an individual interact with somebody that's got two personalities? Which one you gonna give us today? Because I think if you came with a label that says, okay, today is gonna be
right,
so and
right.
so, that can change the whole dial. A Gemini.
Both of them.
And see, my mother and my sister, my younger sister and my mother, my sister is a Cancer. And so they're like, talk about emotional, like always in her feelings and whatnot. Yeah. And they talk every damn day. And they get into fights every damn day. Now they love each other to death, but they'll just be, they can't, it's just oil and water. Like they just can't operate. Yeah. And I keep saying, like, I keep my family on a schedule. I talk to my mom every Friday, sometimes every other Friday. I talk to my dad on Saturdays and Sundays.
Wait, you
I talk
said to you're a what?
A middle child.
I'm a Leo. Got it.
Yeah, I'm a Leo. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you are.
That sounds very yeah. Leo.
Very on brand. Yeah. Very on brand. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Unlike we were saying about Geminis earlier, that wasn't shade.
Right. Listen. Did you see me get defensive? I own that shit.
That's right.
I own that. You own who you are. Yes. You don't have to listen. If look,
you know how hard it came by all this. I'm gonna take it all.
You know how hard I had to work to just be able to
you know
sit
what it took to get here.
Yes,
I think own it. You think I'm gonna do anything but celebrate it?
I think the only terrible sign are Scorpios. I think that they are. The only
leave my family alone. Leave my family alone.
Scorpios. They're the only ones that I have a hard time with. I think every other sign is fine, like, because you can understand most of them. Like, you get who they are. Again, Pisces are emotional, but I'm like, you know what? It's I get it. You have emotions. I don't necessarily own them, but I get that you have them. Like, you know, like, you can understand. I understand Aquarius. I get who they are. I love me some Cancers. Capricorns are great. Scorpios are the only ones that are sneaky. Vindictive, and then when they want to sting you, they be stinging the shit out of you. They come for your whole lineage. and they are just mean. And I'm like, dang, you ain't have to come at me like that, but it's fine.
I feel that. I either really like Scorpios or I really hate Scorpios. Like, most of the people I've gotten into it physically with have been Scorpios.
They're sneaky. I think that's what my issue is with them, is that they're sneaky. It's like, I feel like with Geminis, like, oh, you don't know who you're going to get, but at least, like, we're, like...
It's not intentional.
We are who we are. Like, do you see what I'm saying? Like, it's just that it's... I feel like Scorpios just be doing shit undercover. Like, they just be doing shit undercover. You pop out and they're like serial killers. Anyways.
As your Scorpio listeners are like,
okay. Unsubscribe.
They're going to be leaving that big apart. They're going to be leaving a bad review.
It's fine.
You're going to get a whole bunch of scorpions in your comments, girl.
Not the beehive. They beehive.
They're going to be playing all of Eve's album.
Right. I'd be convinced me otherwise, but... But anyways, Karel, tell us about you and young Karel and what life was like for you growing up.
Like they said earlier, I'm a pastor's kid. So that has a whole dynamic of just the way a lot of my viewpoint is shaped. And it was just like one of those things growing up as a pastor's kid by two people that were raised in the South in like segregation, moved to Michigan. Well, get his PhD in Iowa State, move to Michigan, and decide to raise us in a predominantly white area, but then the church is predominantly Black. So like throughout my life, I kind of have this weird duality of not quite knowing where the hell I fit. Because it's like, I might not be like Christian enough because like I'm worried about being gay, but then I might not be straight enough because I know I'm gay, but I'm hiding from the gay. Like, it's just constantly all this stuff. But then I'm not white enough because all the white kids over here, but then they're saying, oh, you talk too white. So all the Black kids at the church were saying, oh, well, Corral's just too white. It's just too much. And literally, I was just trying to survive. I found that I probably did a lot of stuff. Like, I kind of think back as I've gotten older. If I did a lot of things because like I was like student council president and all this stuff, getting extra involved. And sometimes I wonder if I did that to control my narrative, because it's just like, I know if I do this, I can control what they see and they won't find out Carell's gay. And so that's just kind of only been in the last few years that I've kind of like taken a step back. It's like, did I really do that because I wanted to? Or did I do that because I was scared to be found out if I didn't do something? And it's kind of a weird thing. But then even through like college, and honestly, even through like a lot of my 20s, was hiding in the closet. And it took me moving to Chicago to finally deal with myself in a way. Because I remember and I don't even think I've shared this on the podcast. I remember times I lived in exclusive. But I remember there was many times in Indiana just bawling. And going to church and getting like the oils and everything and just like just bawling, because I was just like, why can I not control this? Why can I, you know? And it's just like, and I just, yeah. And so like a lot of people, even in Indiana, were shocked when I came out, because they're like, how? And I'm like, I controlled the narrative so well. And it was tiring though. Like I was watching exactly what I wore, what I talked about, what I this, I that, all because I didn't want to be sought out, because probably a lot of the Christianity growing up. But I also realized I was doing it more for my mom and dad more than even myself. I was protecting them way more than myself. Even, yes, I was protecting myself, but I was scared that if their church members found out Carell was gay, if they had the gay son at the church, everyone was going to run from the church, and it affects them. And their livelihood and their ministry and things that they're good at. But one thing I realized now, and sorry, my voice is going out, I'm fighting a cold. One thing I found out is I didn't give people the benefit of the doubt to form their decisions one way or the other. And now that I'm out, I found that a lot of them probably would have been fine with it. And I didn't give them the benefit of the doubt at all. And so that's something I've had to learn about myself. Just like, okay, you're trying to control so much of it. Are you like, why? What are you doing? Give folks the benefit of the doubt, because what you think in your head, it's probably not going to be the reality, you know? But it was hard coming out though. Like when I finally came out, it wasn't roses at all. Like some of it, what I thought they were going to say, they did say, but it's kind of cool now. Like, especially like my mom's kind of more, she's a Pisces too. So it's like, she's emotional, but she's kind of almost has like a wall up. And then, like, but I know all the emotions behind it, because everyone in my family says, Carell, you understand your mom the best out of anyone. My dad doesn't understand her, my sister, my brother, her sisters don't. Everyone say, Carell, you understand Linda the best. And so I think I was more scared of her reaction, and what she did say hurt me. But I still adore my mom so much, and she's now the first one, like, to comment on Corey's stuff on Facebook and stuff like that. So it's cool to see the journey she's even had.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been a journey. It still is a journey. Honestly, the podcast came about of wanting to finally reveal a lot of that and get that off of myself, and like what everyone else does with it, that's on you now. Like, I'm cool with myself and being able to show a fuller spectrum, A, for myself, but then also like the friend group that I have, to show that there is a fuller spectrum of gay Black men. And it might not be what you stereotypically think in your head, right, wrong, or indifferent. So I still find, even at 37 years old, there's still a journey of dealing with yourself, dealing with everyone else, and truly fighting for yourself to be as authentic as you can.
I love that.
Well said.
I love that so much. And it's crazy because, like, listening to all three of y'all's stories, like, I find that I relate to every single piece of it. Like, every single piece of it. It's funny that you said what you said, Carell, because I did. So I won't say I grew up in the church. My mother and father were not pastors or anything, but there was this element of our presence at church that made us kind of like the Huxtables of the church.
Yeah.
Where like I was president of the youth group and I was in the choir and my, you know, we were like very present there. So my gay presence was like not really something that you wanted broadcasted in the church, right? Exactly. Like that, it just wasn't that. That just wasn't a thing. It was very interesting.
Saw like weekly the guest church coming in with the gay choir director, like it was like so obvious.
Yes,
but you still knew there was this undercurrent that you knew you could not at least publicly reveal that.
Yeah,
right. It was an underlying rule. You know?
Yeah. I grew up in predominantly white neighborhoods where my dad was very much so trying to like not. My mom and dad just wanted to give us really great opportunities. And we were in my middle school was like predominantly Mormon. Like I was like in schools around Mormon people. So it was like white.
Yeah.
And then we were going to black churches, you know, which was like crazy. So we constantly combating with who I was as a person, like what, you know, where I fit in. All my friends were white, but you know, I wasn't the only black person because there were other minorities, like, you know, so it was just, it's just crazy. So we really appreciate you all sharing that because it's fun because it gives you some perspective. And
it also shows, hopefully, that people are listening if they're going through this, that there's other people that went through that shit. So I come out, girl. Like, it is what it is. Cause, like,
I
feel like a lot of times you feel like
nobody was going through that. But then you hear literally four black men right now and they're the similarities. Yeah. And it's just like, you're not alone. You're not alone. And it's going to be okay. Yes, it's going to hurt at times, but it will be okay.
True when they say it gets better. You know, like you rip the band-aid off and it's going to sting. It's going to hurt, but it really does get better. A little bit of that
oxygen on it and it heals.
Yeah.
and it gets better.
Times heal all.
It does. I love it. So now onto something more fun. All three of y'all are in relationships. Tell us a little bit about that. Because, girl, you are... Carell, you already said that you are in a little bit of a tiff with
Jill Mandarin. And that's a real ass statement. Yeah.
Tell us about your relationships.
And I love him with all of my heart. That's my boo. But right now, he just got on my damn nerves and he needs to know that. we've been together a little over 9 years, been married almost 2 years, met when we were in Chicago, just one random drunken bar night in Chicago. And he asked me out on a date. Like, that was a Friday. I gave him my number. Like, he asked for my number. I actually gave him my real number. And I tell him to this day, literally, I recall in my head thinking, I ain't trying to get booed up. I'm trying to have a hot whole summer, you know, through thought shit and all that stuff.
Right, right.
And actually gave him my real number. He texted me that next morning, asked me if I wanted to go do dinner the next day. I was like, okay, I see. Like, I was like, okay, it's free food. Okay. went on that date and literally been together ever since. Like, was not on my radar, was not what I was looking. Like, I didn't want to be booed up, but he just got my heart. We're in an interracial relationship and he's 15 years older than I am. So there's the interracial part of it. There's the age part of it. There was even at the beginning of our relationship, Carell still coming out that whole process and dealing with myself. And so for him to be patient along the journey, and it doesn't mean we haven't had tiffs and fights and things like that along the way, but he was very patient of me trying to find myself. And I appreciate that so much. That's my boo. He's a Midwest guy. He's originally from Ohio, lived in New York for a number of years. He's very creative. Almost to a fault sometimes. I'm like, okay, girl, enough with the creative shit, enough with the antiques, enough with that. But that's him. Like, it brings him so much joy. It really does. So it's just like, I'm not going to stomp on your joy. Like, if that's what you like, okay, maybe not buy something every week to bring it in the house. So that's my boo. That's my boo.
I love it.
And that's, he's a Cancer. Amazing. So I don't know what that means.
I love it. That's amazing. Well, good for you. What about you, Dwan?
Adam and I have been together for 6 years, 6.5 years, and we met in Chicago. And he's just like, he's really amazing. He's younger than I am. I'm 11 years older. He's the first guy that I dated that was younger than me. I always dated somebody that was like my age or older.
She a cougar.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I've had my fair share of, you know, the menagerie. But yeah, no, I remember that being a conscious thing because, you know, when we met, I just, I was maybe nine to 10 months out of a long-term relationship, about 7 years that, you know, that ended badly. And, I really wasn't interested. I wanted to just know myself. I just wanted to get to know myself. You know, mm-hmm. I find that when you're in a relationship for a very long time, your identity sometimes gets intertwined with the relationship. Right. And, I've always been drawn to long-term relationships. That's just something that I aspire towards. And it's really important to me that, you know, can go into a new relationship without a whole bunch of baggage. So I remember when I met him, I was just like, no, it's too young. I don't really do young. And I don't know. But then when I got to like our very first date, I invited him over for chicken noodle soup. And it was a winter
soda
on the side.
With a soda. I know that's right. I was looking to say that.
You know, we watched the Grammys. It was a snowstorm in Chicago. I was like, well, why don't you come over? It was a Sunday. I was like, why don't you come over? I'll make chicken noodle soup and just hang and just get to know each other. And like, I wasn't expecting anything out of that. And that was a first date. And we saw each other for the next literally like 3 months with only like one day of a break. It was just like, there was just that much chemistry between the two of us. And he's even though he's younger than I am, he's like an old soul. And so, and he's also a Capricorn.
I was waiting for it. I knew why. I was like,
I mean, this relationship I've never had a relationship where I've had this many arguments and have still been enticed to stay. like this is a lot of work. These Capricorns out here. Like I tell him all the time, you wake up ready to fight. Like wait for something. Like, but at the same time,
you'll never be bored.
No, we'll never be bored. And he just is genuinely has like the biggest heart. Out of any person that I've ever met, and I absolutely adore him. We've been together for, like I said, six and a half years. Yeah. So, 6 to 8 months into our relationship, I got a job offer, that was going to take me out of state, and I was in this new relationship. And, you know, I went to him and said, hey, I really love how the way things are going, but I have this great opportunity to move. It's, you know, basically cross country. And, you know, if you are interested in going on an adventure, I would love to have you be a part of it. And he, I think he was ready to do it without really thinking about it. That's a really Capricorn thing to do. And I said, you might need to like think about this. I got a little bit of time, take a couple of days and really think about it. I gave him a couple of days. He didn't really think about it. he just said, I'm going to do it. And we went on there. And if anyone of you have ever moved, I know Carell, you've done this and, you know, and Jarrell, you've moved for a relationship. So like moving, you know, like finding another job, like starting another job, starting a whole new life in a completely different city in the buddiness, you know, the nubileness of your relationship is a lot to navigate. You learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about your partner. You learn a lot about negotiating and letting a bunch of shit go that may be important to you, but you know, you see the bigger picture and the future of your relationships and all that kind of fun stuff. So, you know, the fact that Adam has had, has been willing to, put his life on the line, not literally, but like figuratively.
I was like, you're using that? I was like,
he's, he's not that great.
No, but you know, like to put things on hold. Like when I say his life, his career, his family, his friends, like leave all that stuff behind on the precipice of a relationship that has the opportunity to, you know, to be a long-term thing, you know, that was a lot to ask. And he was up for the journey. We've been through quite a journey together. And it wasn't always roses. That's some difficult stuff to go through. But, you know, thanks to him and just what he brings to the relationship, like I couldn't imagine have going through that with anybody else. So, and we still together. So we still together. And you know what? That is our relationship. Because as soon as them doors, like when this camera goes off, we're gonna be back to like throwing arrows at each other and hit each other with the chair. Not for real.
I just love black people so much because he couldn't have gotten away with saying that without us being like, and we still
right.
And we just literally every black cultural thing always requires us to repeat it, and I'm here for it. I just love it. That's amazing. Jarrell, tell us about your relationship.
Woo, child. So I've been with Fizz. His name is Fiznik. We've been together 4.5 years. It'll be 5 years this December.
Wow.
Wow, it's been 5 years already.
Yeah, it'll be 5 years. I was on my whole tour when I met him. you know, the tour came to an abrupt end after we met.
Not the B2K tour.
You know, no, for real though, I was literally like in Seattle visiting trade when I met him. So like,
wow.
We met on Tinder. And Fizz had just moved to the U.S. So Fizz is from Kosovo, so from Europe. And he had just moved to the U.S. And he was living like outside of Seattle, probably like an hour away. And so the weekend that we ended up meeting on Tinder, we were talking and he was like, oh, I got this hotel room. And I was like, oh, damn, another dude talking about a hotel room. It ain't that time. I ain't here for that. So I actually like ghosted him like and said nothing. So, you know, like on the apps, it tells you like how far you are away from the people you're talking to. Mm-hmm. And so when I returned back home after the tour ended,
was it a good tour?
It was a great tour. Critical girl, acclaim. Look, you know, it was a great tour. Look,
critical acclaim.
Cause that was a year that we had the matching tanks at Market Days.
Oh my gosh.
And fun fact, my New Year's resolution was to go the whole year being single. Cause I had never gone so long with going single. Cause kind of like Dewan, like I've always been in long-term relationships. And so literally got, there was 5 days left in the year. 5 days left in the year, I got in a relationship. But no, we actually, got in a relationship before actually physically meeting like face to face. So we had talked on the phone, you know, been on FaceTime and stuff like that. And just something about him just felt right. You know, like it was, I found myself, because I wasn't looking for love. And actually at that time I was looking for black love, to be all completely transparent. Like I was done trying to explain myself to someone, you know, talk about, you know, like just some of the things that may be bothering me. And he had kind of already like came with his homework done. Like he kind of understood being, you know, in the war as a kid, as a refugee in Kosovo, mm-hmm. you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know. So he kind of understood some of the roles, because Albanian people are kind of like the black folks of Europe, you know, like certain mm-hmm. countries they can't even get into, like right. Russia and Spain, because right. right. they don't recognize them as a country.
Right.
You know, so he kind of understood. And it was like, okay, this man gets it. And then he was like calling me, you know, my king and all this other stuff. And I was like, my mama told me to find somebody to call you his king because you right. are a king. And I was like, that's the one.
You got woke, bae. I love this.
Right? Girl, there was a Black Lives Matter march happening in Seattle. We had just started dating. We had probably been together for like maybe like 3 weeks. He FaceTimed me. I'm in the bed, like, eat me some Domino's pizza. It's like 9 o'clock. I'm like, And here he is at the Black Lives Matter march, like, where are you at? What are we doing? I'm like, I'm eating, but you better hold the fort down. You know, look, get to the front of the line. Get to the front of the line. but it's been very interesting, though, culturally, just being not just being in a race relationship, but a cultural different relationship. Like being someone from Europe who has a completely different, you know, aspect on life and relationships. You know, a lot of some of the European cultures that very old school, like, you know, you ride it to the wheel, fall off, you know, you don't really talk about things and stuff like that. So been having to work through a lot of that communication stuff in a relationship has been very, very difficult. It's, whew, I ain't going front, but you know, I finally found someone that makes me want to do the work. If that makes sense. Like I feel energized to do the work because I know that's gonna make me want this even more. Every time I do the work, I'm like, I ain't do that shit for nothing. Right. I needed something, you know, to live to see another day. You ain't going nowhere, you know. So
I love
it. It's been great, but like my lady said here, like it's work. It's not always roses, and sometimes he sleeps on the couch.
If that's not,
isn't that the beautiful thing about relationships, though? Like, all kidding aside, isn't it wonderful that you get to figure out how to like work through some of the most difficult things in life with the person that you care about the most? And even though it's frustrating, and you know, I've had my fair share of like sofa sleeping, and you know, like, and we've all been in relationships that long enough to know that it's not always going to be the honeymoon phase, but to be able to have like those kinds of conversations, those kinds of blowouts, those kinds of like moments where you just don't want to be bothered. It's like the things that they do to you that you used to think was cute. Now you like annoyed, like, stop touching me. Like, you know, like, but it's like, but it's so beautiful to be in that place because I think we, you know, like, I don't know about you, but you, like, I grew up romanticizing what being in a relationship, yeah, a gay relationship, sure, is going to be like. Mm-hmm. And I didn't picture any of this. Like, I thought it was going to be.
This ain't what I signed up for.
Right. I was looking for that, you know, Disney love, you know, and.
Ooh, that's, not like happily, that's a bar.
That Disney love.
But, you know, you don't get that. And then when you come to terms with the fact that, like, it's not just a them thing. It's not like their problem. Like, it's like, oh, but their shit that I'm doing, my evil ass.
Wait, I'm flawed too. Right?
Like that self-realization, that's a beautiful byproduct of, you know, these long-term relationships. Like, you get to learn shit about yourself.
That accountability.
Yes.
Like, I really didn't learn that until being in a relationship where I cared so much about someone else's feelings, where I was like, maybe I should think about my own. You know, it's different when you're with your family, you know, because you have that relation. You're like, you family, like, you ain't going nowhere, ain't going nowhere, no love ever, you know. And even with like your chosen family and your friends, you know, you can still just jump ship in life and just keep on going, and they don't got to worry about them. But when it comes to relationship and building a life with someone, it's like, if I don't do this, then I'm losing out on something too.
Yeah.
So I, you know, it becomes that much more important to me to learn how to be accountable and vulnerable, you know.
And like, I feel like we were never taught that it's a choice to show up every day.
Yeah, like, right.
I choose to show up every day and love my husband. Even the days where I don't feel like being fooled with him, I ain't going nowhere. Yes, I'm mad at him right now, but it is what it is. I'll see your ass at dinner, bitch. You know? and that's the part of it that I don't think a lot of families teach, and nor should they, probably, quite frankly. Like, it's not, you shouldn't probably put a lot of that burden on your kids in a way. Maybe there's certain conversations that should be had, but that's the part where it's just like, I didn't realize that my parents chose to wake up every day and stay married. It's a fucking choice to do it, you know?
I would say that it does need to be a conversation that's had, because the only other conversation is the Disney movie. Yeah, and that creates a really just flawed, inappropriate kind of an idea. And what I always say about the Disney movies is the minute they get together is when the movie ends. So you don't get to see any of the real work. Right. You don't get to see the actual relationship. You know, yeah, I think we should be talking about it. Right. Well,
it's
right.
I mean,
it's interesting because I grew up in a very combative house. My mom and dad were at each other's becks quite often, right? Like there was just like arguments were aplenty. We were never short in the argument department. And so I spent a good portion of my time, especially the beginning of the, you know, me and Tony's relationship, thinking that your arguments are normal. Like you're supposed to be fiery and annoyed with one another and not liking one another. And I kind of have
that same way.
I'm sorry.
It's like my husband the same way. Like he said, he grew up kind of more in a combative household where he thought, and I think it still kind of comes up sometimes, where like love is shown to be combative, and me and my bitch, no, correct. And,
correct. Carl said, "Not with this delicate flower."
Not with me. Not this Pisces.
And with my Pisces, she said, "Not with this souffle."
Exactly. So, do you guys know what they call a soft top? These days, do you know what they call a soft top?
Oh my god, like a convertible or something?
A blouse. So I told Tony that he is a blouse. And it is so fun. And you know, so Tony had to try to teach me that, like, hi, we can actually, like, be sweet and kind and loving to one another. And it doesn't have to be so contentious all the time. Like, it doesn't have to be, like, us, like, constantly fighting one another. And I've had to kind of reprogram the way that I love him in a way that makes it so that, like, we can find time to be loving to one another that doesn't consist of me telling him how annoying he is all the time.
Well, and it's funny because, like, most of my friends, no shade to my friends, if y'all hear this, I love all y'all. But outside these two ladies on this screen and one other friend, Josh, Mark and Josh, all my friends are single. So like a lot of the conversations that I'm about how I'm feeling, their perspective come from a whole dump them. You can do better. You know, like they overhear like the, you know, the flight attendant, like your exes are right here, girl. Like, like you get to go. But I can't tell y'all like how often, like, not how often, because that sounds like it's a lot, but there's been a few times where, like, Biz and I were going through something, and I would talk to the ladies before a podcast or even afterwards, and they'll be like, girl, look, one time, da-da-da-da-da, or, like, same here. And I'm like, oh, so this is normal. And then my whole reaction, how I feel about the whole situation just goes straight down. I'm like, okay, I don't care anymore. Because just a simple conversation of normalizing it makes it that much more easy to process and be like, this is normal. I'm overreacting. This is not a big deal.
Yeah. Well, what do they say? Stop getting advice from your single friends, right? Because they clearly don't have anybody. So how are they supposed to give you advice?
Ouch. Like, I've been learning. It's
true, though.
No shade to our single listeners.
Part of it is, like, Tony's always like, I wish you would, like, spend more time talking to, like, when you're going through things, like, talk to your friends about it. And I have a rule because I'm like, don't get me wrong. There are times where I'm like, I'll, like, talk to my friends because I need, like, insight, like, into me, not necessarily into Tony. Like, I have him figured out. Like, I need to know if I'm tripping.
She said, I already read him. Like, I don't need anything else. I already read him. So now I want to work on the beautiful stuff that I have to worry about.
Yeah, I need to know if I was tripping or if I was justified in what I said and stuff like that. But I tell people all the time, like, I hate complaining about my husband to my friends because they don't know our relationship the way we know our relationship. So I know that I can bitch and complain about him and then still want to, like, snuggle up next to him at the end of the night.
Right.
Whereas your friends and your family hear you bitching about your partner and they ready to fight, right?
Exactly. Like protection mode.
And so they're not going to see it the exact same way. And I would never want to put any of my friends or my husband in a position in which they're against one another secretly.
Yeah. And let's be honest, like, when you're upset with your spouse or your significant other, It's going to be a one-sided conversation.
You may not tell the whole story.
You might not tell. You might exaggerate a little bit just to make sure that your friends are on your side. You know?
What did he say? Yeah, and then what did you do? That's not important.
We're not talking about
that. No, come on. What did you do? I punched him. Okay, you might be at fault
there. We're not talking about domestic violence, my friend.
I also feel like, and, you know, I try not to talk about, like, issues within a relationship unless, you know, like it's I probably talk to my sister out of anybody about anything, but I try not to talk a lot about like specific issues only because you start to paint a picture for other people outside of, you know, your relationship, you know, of like who this person is. And if they're like, oh, well, because I mean, I've done that before where like, oh yeah, well, you know, me and my then boyfriend or partner or whatever, been going through this and he did this. And then they're like, oh, I didn't know he was like that.
Right.
So then it starts to paint a picture and it's just like, now I've like cast this picture that's out there. That's not a full representation of, that's just a moment in time.
Right.
Correct.
And you have that relationship where you have those ebbs and flows and, you know, the picture of you might not always be prettiest either, you know? So like, I've learned, at least for me, to just strike a balance with what I tell other folks about what's going on in my business.
Yeah, you know,
you know, I might talk about things in generalities, or I might talk about things after they have been resolved, or, you know, like I said, every once in a while, like I talk to my sister almost every day. And, you know, like I'll tell her stuff, but it's more just to like, I just need to get some stuff out there because we both know that she's not really giving me advice. I'm not giving her advice. Like that's just not the point of it. It's more just venting. But I'm very selective with who I tell what about what's going on in the context of my relationship.
Sure. I get it. Yeah. I get that. I totally get
that. I think it's
that.
Always important though, to find that one person though, because at the end of the day, you know, when we're having those conversations to ourselves, it's easier for us to talk ourselves in circles to still be right. And you still need that outside perspective of someone and be like, nah, bitch, you wrong. And that's why these two know that always say, tell me, because that's the person I am, you know, because sometimes you need that other person to help you see, the, you know, to be the middle person, to understand the other side. And sometimes you may be in an unhealthy like space and not know that. And that one person, just having that one person, everything ain't for everybody. So I'm not saying spread your business, you know, but I'm saying still find that one person where you can go wholeheartedly, authentically to, and honestly to. And you know that that person's a vault. They have your best interest and the whole aspect, not just you being single, but just also encouraging you. No, do this because you're wrong here, and this is going to better you in your relationship.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Yeah, right.
And for me, it's my mother, because my mother's the only other person. Her birthday is the day after me, so everything that you see here, everything you get from me, I literally get it from my mama.
You with a wig on.
My mom.
Let me tell you. Let me tell you. Rhonda gives a smoke too, so you know she'll tell me. She'll be like, "Don't be talking to my son like that." I'd be like, "Oh, you mean him?
Mama.
I'm your son." She'd be like, "Look." She comes up to defense and everything. So you got to have that one person that's going to be like, give you the business and give you that truth and tell you when you're wrong as well. You know, and that's someone that's always going to tell you you're right.
And in a good relationship, and I try to do my best to make Tony that person. And I know it sounds weird, but in a good relationship, I feel like I should be able to come to Tony and be like, look, I am having a reaction to X, Y, and Z. And I just need to let you know where I'm at right now with these whole things.
Nice.
And I do it. I don't always do it very well, but I at least include him into it because I do want to be able to tell him what's going on, how I'm feeling, where I'm at, so he knows. And then we can figure things out together. And I don't necessarily need any outside opinions or views in terms of that. So.
I think the hard part of all of this is that we've lost the art of communication.
Oh yeah.
Like effective communication, you know, and for as digital as the world has become, you know, we don't have the kinds of communication skills that would allow a lot of us to be able to resolve some things. So it becomes easier to just cut somebody off, easier right. to end a relationship, easier. Like, but doing things that are easy doesn't necessarily make it right. And doing things that easy aren't necessarily driving your growth. It's mm-hmm. when you go through something that's hard and you go through something that's difficult and you endure it. And hopefully you've endured it with some element of compassion.
Grace. I was just going to say grace. Well, yeah.
We call it the wild sometimes on Team Grace.
But it's true. Like sometimes you have to go through some things and it's the learning that happens as a result of going through something that's difficult. You know, I always say that learning is crunchy, right? You know you are learning. You know that you are growing when it doesn't always feel good.
Yeah.
And if it's feeling good and feeling nice and feeling smooth all the time, guess what? That's a plateau.
That's a problem
boo.
Too. Yeah.
That's a plateau. Yeah. And it's not to say that you shouldn't have, you know, there should be peaks and valleys. Let's mm-hmm. put it that way. You should have, you know, the stock market going up. You should have peaks and valleys as you're going up and leveling up. So, you know, like if you're always running away from, you know, a difficult conversation or whatever, you know, then you're kind of like stuck in a cycle to just repeat that over and over and over again because you're not really growing from it.
Yeah. So before we get out of here, tell our listeners about your podcast, because I'm a huge fan of the Minority Report, but tell them about your podcast and what they can expect to find on your podcast, because these aunties be spilling all sorts of tea every single week.
Spilling a lot. You know what? You just got to get honesty and as authentic of an experience as possible. We want to just show the spectrum of being a queer Black man and have a space where folks could be seen and heard and represented. Specifically, like obviously we're three gay Black men, but really just people of color within the queer community. We really are advocates for and just really just sharing our story and our journey and talking about Beyonce a lot and Serena a lot, but also talking about Black Lives Matter and in especially the last couple of years, obviously politics was very heavy. And so luckily we haven't had to do too much of that this year. We be holding people accountable still, but luckily we've kind of been able to get away from that because oh boy ain't in the house no more. But honestly, it's just a space to feel seen and heard and kiki with two of my good friends, quite frankly. And you know, some weeks might be heavier on hot topics. Some weeks we have a segment called Ask Your Aunties, where the community send in their questions every week and we provide them our advice and opinion as best as we can. And a lot of times it gets like raunchy and sexual and talking about MapQuest dick and all that shit, but you remember the days of MapQuest? Come on now.
Yes.
But yeah, and I mean, new episode every Monday, wherever you stream, listen, subscribe to podcasts, and you can find us on like IG. We put every episode on YouTube as well, so we love a good wig moment, so there might be weeks you might see us in wigs and living our best fantasy and all that good stuff, so...
I also love it too because the versatility that exists in all of y'all. Because you're right, like you literally, like no topic is off the table.
So there's, I know Jarrell's like, I never heard that about myself.
No, I just love it because there's y'all talk sports. You know, y'all talk politics. You talk, you know, pop culture. You talk music. You talk just a little bit about any and everything, which is really great. And again, from like a you know, queer Black perspective, it's always nice to have those voices out there to be able to do that with, right? Because we don't always, again, as I said before we even started recording, is that, you know, that media doesn't exist everywhere, you know?
And when it does, nice like, it's a stereotype. Yes, we might be part of that stereotype, but there's just so much more to us that I wish I heard and saw growing up, quite frankly, because it would have made me feel so much more comfortable with myself quicker.
Yeah. It's amazing. So definitely listen to the Minority Report, where you listen to all of your podcasts. Auntie Carell, Auntie Jarrell. We appreciate all of y'all. Oh, I'm sorry.
Can't forget Dewan. Come on,
Char. Sorry, Dewan. I literally look. You know how you like look at someone and you think that you accomplished something, and then I like moved on. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I told you in the beginning I was the Michelle of the group. So
no, I like literally looked at your face and then like went down and I was like, oh, that was my brain moving faster than my lips. That's all that was.
It's all good.
I apologize. Thank you all for being here. We appreciate you. You are perfection. Wrapped in chocolate. And I'm so thankful for it all. We really
thanks for having
y'all.
Us. Yeah. I appreciate that. So love this.
Oh, I know Tony got the taco meat out too. We can't forget Tony's taco meat over there. Come on, DP.
I can't. He's living his totally Tony Montana. Tony Montana?
Tony Montana.
There you go.
Bafangu.
All right, we're going to take a short break, but we'll be back in just a bit. Hey, babe. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals?
You mean besides you?
I'm not preventing you from achieving your goal. I am the goal.
You're interfering with my
happiness.
I am
the goal.
Keep
saying it with me. I am the goal.
I think you need therapy. And it's a good thing that we're going to talk about BetterHelp.com.
Well, did you know that BetterHelp will assess your needs, match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and that you can start communicating with the therapist in under 24 hours?
I did. And I know BetterHelp is not a crisis line or self-help. Rather, it's a professional counseling done securely online. The service is available for clients worldwide, and you can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor.
Yep, you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room feeling embarrassed or ashamed.
It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available.
Yeah, so head to betterhelp.com/Cretellis. That's better, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. Relationship listeners get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Cretellis.
BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today, and so do we. So check them out.
All right, Chitterlings. So before we get out of here, of course, Tony and I have some shit to put on your radar.
Get the Windex ready.
The Windex?
Mm-hmm, because there's shit on your radar.
Why do you need Windex? Does Windex... I mean,
what else are you going to clean it up with?
Windex cleans shit? I mean, it is kind of like the all-purpose cleaner, right? Except they don't promote it that way. So the very first thing that I'm going to put on y'all's radar is, of course, there is still time. This is actually the very last week. This is the final week. This is where we need y'all to rally. We need you to help us out. Podcast Awards. So make sure you head to podcastawards.com. There is a link. There's a blue button at the very top of the page. Click that, register. Scroll down to the LGBTQ section of the Podcast Awards nominees. Go down to the Relationship Podcast and vote for your hoes. Vote for us. Vote for us. Help us win. We need you. We need you very badly. So help us win. July 31st is when voting closes. So like I said, by the time everyone hears this, y'all have time to be able to help out. So make sure you head over there and do that and take care of that right this second.
Last chance, y'all.
Help us. We really want to win.
Help us help you.
So let's totally make that happen. That's amazing. And then if y'all are, so that's the first thing. So then the next thing is, if y'all are not listening to the Minority Report, then y'all bitches is missing out. So make sure you head to on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, all those good stuff. Everywhere you get podcasts, like make sure you check them out and listen to their podcast, subscribe, and then also follow them. They're amazing and they're just the best. And we love them so much and really thank them for being a part of today's episode. Make sure you head to their Instagram. They are at MinorityTEAReport. And follow them, because them bitches be spilling tea every single week, and we just love them so much. I'm obsessed. Yeah?
Yeah.
And then finally, Our good friend DJ Symphonia just released an EP. It is an amazing album that has 6 tracks on it. And so make sure you go check them all out right now. Everywhere you listen to music, it's on Apple Music, on Spotify, Tidal, YouTube Music, everywhere, SoundCloud, all that good stuff. But he has some amazing music. Of course, you all have listened to It's Only On My Mind, Only In My Mind. But he also has other things on there like Low Tiempo and High Above and Molasses and Momentum, which is really cool. So make sure you check those tracks out. Give DJ Symphonia some love from the Cortellis and from you as well. We adore him. He's absolutely great. And we know that he needs our support. So make sure you help a bitch out. Yeah.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for tuning in to the Relationship Podcast, part of the DNR Studios Network.
Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Pod Relationship. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us. And keep listening to season 4, Le Quattro.
If you have any relationship situations that you'd like help with on an upcoming episode of the show, leave us a voicemail at 903-POD-SHIT. That's 903-763-7448. We have an upcoming episode in the month of August, so we need your submissions right away. Leave us a voicemail so we can help you solve your problems. You can also email us at relationshipquestions@gmail.com or submit on our website, which is podrelationship.com.
Be sure to check out the Relationship blog on the website this Friday, where I'll muse a bit further on the week's topic.
A special thank you to our Patreon members. We hope you enjoyed the behind-the-scenes interview with this week's guests. Tony and I will harass your ears next week.
And remember, it's okay to have a fetish, but cut out that racial fetish shit.